Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC for our final segment today. Two words: reopening anxiety, as parts of life are starting to reopen. Do you think your anxiety will outlast the threat of the disease? Starting today, all of New York State, other than the city, is in phase one of reopening, which means curbside retail is okay, construction work and manufacturing work are back. New Jersey is on a similar track, so if you're part of that cohort, how are you feeling about going back to work? You're obviously lucky to have a job, but for so long, the message has been, it's not safe to go to work. So are you having trouble switching that message off in your brain? Are you experiencing reopening anxiety? Call us and describe it. We're going to have somebody who can give you some advice and some analysis of this new phenomenon in our world. 646-435-7280. And in your personal life, are you feeling anxious about seeing people again? Friends, family, after all this time apart, have you developed social anxiety, afraid of talking to people in person? 646-435-7280. Or is the disease and your anxiety about it a wedge issue for family and friends? Some people are ready to hang out, to have a drink at a safe social distance, to go for a walk, or even merge bubbles. Some people are so not ready and think behavior like that is totally irresponsible. We heard of a couple going to visit friends out of state, and when they got there, they were told they had to sleep outside. Other friends are judgy that you're not ready, right? Rolling their eyes when you say no to a 6-foot walk or a 6-foot picnic. So is anxiety about hanging out, even at a safe social distance, or what they consider a safe social distance, causing stress in your relationships? 646-435-7280 to describe what you're going through or to ask our guest a question, seek advice, or ask another question. 646-435-7280. Are you feeling like the pandemic has changed the way you feel anxiety, the way you experience anxiety, what you're anxious about? Do you see yourself feeling anxious about germs that are maybe not even COVID-19 in a way that you never were before? And do you see that carrying over into quote-unquote normal life when this is all over, God willing? 646-435-7280. With me for this is Dr. George Bonanno, Director of the Loss, Trauma, and Emotion Lab at Columbia University Teachers College. And he's the author of the book, The Other Side of Sadness, What the New Science of Bereavement Tells Us About Life After Loss. Dr. Bonanno, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
So in order to keep people inside, public health officials and the media were tasked with making the public take this disease seriously, which essentially means injecting the public with anxiety. How much has anxiety been a tool to fight this disease?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anxiety has been that much of a tool. I think that people have been fairly rational about it. You know, I mean, it makes sense that people need to stay inside and social distance and whatnot. I think that the facts are out there. I don't think anxiety has been used intentionally, and I don't think that's actually a very good tool either. It's kind of counterproductive.
But as we enter a phase of reopening and people are anxious and want to return to some normalcy, how difficult will it be to turn the anxiety switch off, whether intentionally or not? We've been conditioned by government to feel anxious.
Well, I don't really think we've been conditioned to feel anxious. I think we've been conditioned to be careful and to be on the lookout. And I think that people have had the struggle to manage their anxiety. And I think a lot of people have done that very well indoors. It's a lot easier to do it from the safety of your home. But that's been the task people have had. I think one of the issues is that people are a little bit worn out from the struggle of, you know, dealing with the, this is not a traumatic event. It's a kind of a slow burn, chronic stressor event. And people have had to, you know, to manage their feelings about it, whether it be anxiety or depression. Some people are depressed about things because they've lost things, you know, they've lost people, obviously, but people have lost some sense of identity or their livelihood. So those things tend to wear us out, right? So we're already a little bit of a disadvantage as we try to open up because, you know, chronic stress tends to wear us out biologically. We're just a little bit less equipped to continue coping with things. So as we move out, we have, you know, we have new anxieties. I think there are a lot of fresh anxieties about trying to open up and get back to work and get back out to do social things and to provide work for people. Because there are a lot of unknowns. We still don't know how the disease works exactly. We don't know how other people are going to behave, and those things can all be very unnerving as we move forward.
Dawn in Hampton, Virginia. You're on WNYC. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, the anxiety that I experienced is literally added to the generalized anxiety that I have been diagnosed with. And yes, I have social anxiety, but when I go to the store, when I choose to go to the store, that makes me anxious. When should I go in the morning? Should I go in the evening? I have to really monitor when I leave the house now because it really puts me in a state of mind that's always on edge now. And I want to buy meat. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to buy meat. I'm hungry for meat. So instead of going to the grocery store like I used to, I'll just opt to go and maybe order a pizza or something like that on the basis of knowing about what's going on in the meatpacking plant. You know, and I'm a teacher in Hampton, Virginia. So all the talk about how we're going to deal with the students when we go back into the classroom, and just as Ms. Weingartner pointed out earlier, what are the best practices for dealing mm-hmm. with children of all ages? I work with middle schoolers. The thought of trying to separate middle schoolers and have some staggering lag time between their going and coming in the hallway, that is very nerve-wracking to me.
Right. So one thing I'll say, Dawn, that might help on, you know, with one point that you make is from everything I've read, whatever's going mm-hmm. on as threats to the meat processing plant workers, the disease is not mm-hmm. being transmitted into the meat. Yeah. And so that should, from everything I've read, you should Google it yourself and make sure you're comfortable with it. But from everything I've read, that is not actually a risk. So there's that. But Dr. Bonanno, yeah, going back into a classroom full of middle schoolers, it's obvious that people are going to be concerned. So the school district presumably is going to take some precautions that have social distancing and some degree of testing, et cetera, et cetera. So in the context of that, how can somebody like Dawn and a zillion other teachers deal with the anxiety that comes with it?
Right. So I think, you know, there's some things we can do. We can educate ourselves for one. So if there are things that concern you, for example, you raised a great point about the meat. You can find out the answer that is, as Brian had just mentioned. I think we can also decide in advance how we'll behave. And if there are rules in place, and there will be rules in place undoubtedly for most workplaces, will have, you know, decided on how they're going to do things. And I think we know those rules in advance, and we can also decide how we'll behave. I will, you know, I personally will wear a mask always, or I will do this, or I will do that. And that gives us some support in that way. We can also anticipate how we'll deal with certain reactions we might have. So if I start, you know, I or you or anybody starts to become anxious, what would we do about that? Or if somebody's violating the rules, how are we going to handle that? And that the children are one issue, but also just other people, your colleagues. And, you know, what will we say? What will we, how will we react? And I think the more we think about that in advance and the more we can anticipate those things, that helps. So we, you know, a lot of what makes us anxious is uncertainty. So reducing the uncertainty is a really, good way to go, I think. And you know, there are going to be some things happen that you can't anticipate. And I think in those cases, you have to just do the best you can, but also pay attention to them. You can learn from them. You know, I think personally, we have tools. We have our own personal way of dealing with things, and you do as well. And I think it's important to know what those tools are and just think for yourself, what is it that I do? What is am I able to do when I'm in a situation where I'm struggling? What are the things I can do? And keep those in mind, to have those ready at your disposal.
Dawn, I hope that's somewhat helpful. Please do call us again. Sherry in East Hanover, you're on WNYC with Dr. Bonanno. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hi, doctor. So anxiety comes from having to go back to work soon, although my office is rather safe. But my area of anxiety, two other places, similar to your other caller, is that I see more and more people not wearing masks. In stores, yes, but outside, no. I see the man that I got gas from yesterday with gloves that clearly had been worn all day with his mask around his chin. And my husband's a teacher who's going to be expected to make sure that his kids are wearing masks all day. And I think that's a very unfair burden, and that's making me anxious. Any suggestions?
Well, I think, again, you can try to anticipate these things as much as you can and do what you can in advance. You know, do you bring hand sanitizer with you? You know, and you can clean things when you see something happening or something you didn't anticipate. And I think, you know, we can think in advance, what's our comfort level with saying things to people? And I think there are ways to do that. Please keep your distance, or I'm sorry, I don't want to touch that. Or I just can't do that. I'm not going to touch that. I think it's permissible to say those things. And I think if we think it through in advance, it's a little easier. We're less likely to do it with malice or anger, and it's a lot likely to go down better. You know, there are a lot of unknowns in all this, and some of it may unfold better than we think it will. But, you know, I think we have to try to anticipate those things. And that's tricky if you're feeling anxious, I understand, because you don't want to dwell on things or ruminate on things. But, you know, the more we can, again, be ready to deal with, the more, I think, the more we can manage the anxious reactions we have when they happen.
Do you expect people to come out of this with anxiety disorders, like diagnosable anxiety disorders that they didn't have before, as opposed to just, you know, rational responses to uncertain situations that make people anxious?
I do not. I mean, I think that some people will suffer from having gone through this experience, and that generally when there's a very, very aversive event happening, some people do suffer over the long term. But, you know, in my own research, we've studied pretty much every kind of event imaginable. And most people deal with things pretty well. We did a study of SARS, and we did a study of people who were hospitalized for SARS. And if you recall, SARS was much more lethal than this COVID-19 virus. So people who were hospitalized for SARS had a very, very low chance of survival. And the majority of those people were basically okay afterwards, psychologically okay. Some people were distressed for a very long time. It impacted them. But, you know, I think most of us are going to get through this okay. And there will be some casualties. There are always some casualties for any aversive event. But I think most of us will. This is the research has shown this over and over.
Although to the SARS example, if the people you're talking about, the people who recovered, presumably they then became immune. What we have here is a situation where probably the people who haven't had the virus are more anxious than the people who have had the virus. Assuming immunity is real, which we don't know. But also we're told that the virus is everywhere. That's different than the earlier SARS.
Yeah, and I think the anxiety producing piece of this, the COVID-19 virus, is we don't know. You know, if you consume the science, you can find all kinds of different things. It's possible that many, many people are already have the immune markers to fight off the virus, and they don't even know it. And a study came out in Science recently about T cells in unaffected people. So, you know, we just don't know. And the infection rates even though there are many, many cases, still the majority of us have not been infected. And so the unknown around that is floating in the air. Now, one of the things that helps people, and this may sound a little odd, is optimism. And optimism, basically, we're telling ourselves it's going to be okay. One way or another, it's going to be okay. And a lot of people are able to take that stance. And the facts are that we still don't know how this is unfolding. You can play out the worst case scenario. It's going to be a disaster, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. But things are changing over time. And I think it's important for people to keep a sense of, we'll get through this somehow, and we're playing it by ear. We're going to start going back to work. And when we do that, we're going to see how it goes. It's not the case that most people are going to go into a hazardous job with unknown and very clear hazards and just be stuck in that job as it is. I think most employers will adapt as they go along, as they will have to. So I think we're all going into this kind of, you know, we're dipping our feet into it and we're seeing what is going to happen. And I think it's best for us all to stay optimistic about it, and we'll adapt as we go along. And I think we have to, you know, this is a pandemic. It's not an easy situation. So we actually have to do the work of adapting to it as we go along.
Lexi in Bushwick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lexi.
Hey, Brian. Love the show. I am someone who already does have an anxiety disorder, and I take medication for it. But I am really nervous about if and when I go back to work. I've been working from home in Bushwick. I'll have to take the train up to Midtown, and that's about a 45-minute commute from where I live. And I am really nervous about, like, contributing to some sort of greater problem. On top of that, I know that the business that I work in, the industry I work in, we're going to be, like, pretty hard hit when we return to try to make up for sort of lost time from having to work from home. And I'm nervous because I'm afraid I'm not going to get time off in the next, like, year or so. And about a month ago, my mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and I'm really worried about her, too. She lives in Georgia, and the state is reopening and reopened, and I'm just really worried for her safety as well as my ability to be able to see her in the next 6 months, you know, while she's undergoing chemo. Like, being in New York, I feel like, you know, I'm at a greater risk. And if I were to even travel to Georgia, that I would be imposing a risk to the people I'm traveling with, as well as then my mom. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a lot of nervousness around this.
If it helps, just on the objective level, there are rules to protect people from you as a New Yorker, just as a New Yorker, certainly when you get to Georgia, you're supposed to quarantine for 2 weeks. That's just the way it is. And that would probably be required or standard practice right now to visit your mother. And then, you know, the airplanes and trains, however you would go if you're not driving, are trying to impose social distancing rules. But, doctor, that doesn't solve all her anxiety problem about these things.
No, it doesn't. And there are lots of practical issues that you raised, and I can't address those. That's not anything I know about. But, you know, we have no choice in this. We have to find solutions. You know, visiting your mother probably will be off the table. And I don't know. Air travel hasn't been solved yet. So there may be virtual opportunities where you can talk with her. I don't know how feasible that is for you. My own mother is 97 and had to be hospitalized, and I was not happy about it. We did the with the help of other people, we did the Zoom as best we can. But my advice, if I have advice, and I'm not the greatest advice giver, is that right now, one of the things you can do is when you're not on the subway, when you're not at work, you can put as much energy as you can into keeping yourself from becoming overwhelmed by the thoughts about this. It's not easy to do. I understand that. It's not easy for most people. But there are things we can do. We can get it off our mind as best we can. Distraction is very important. You know, being with other people who we feel safe with and comfortable with on Zoom or whatever capacity. There are things we can do now, and I think managing that the anxious thoughts, keeping them as best you can out of your mind, for as many times as you can, as much as you can, is going to really help, because it gives you, it keeps you more on track now if, when you're not in that situation. And, you know, what there are things you can do to distract yourself, and there's humor, there are lots of other things that are often seen as somehow weaker, or, you know, they've gotten a bad name, but, you know, watch a bad movie, you know, and things like that. Those things are very helpful.
Watch
a bad movie. That would be my suggestion.
Movie. We have not previously ended the show with the advice to watch a bad movie.
So watch bad movies.
That's a good place to end this show, as we leave it there with Dr. George Bonanno, Director of the Loss, Trauma, and Emotion Lab at Columbia University's Teachers College. He's the author of the book, The Other Side of Sadness, What the New Science of Bereavement Tells Us About Life After Loss in the Five Worst Movies in History. No, that's not in the title. Thank you very much, Dr. Bonanno.
Thank you. Bye-bye.